Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, as usual, each month, I'm joined by Craig Joseph. But this time, he's got a new job. Craig, tell us, you're now the Chief Medical Officer for Nordic Consulting Partners.
I am. Thank you. It's exciting. It has nothing to do with European countries. That's just the name of the company, but focuses on electronic health records and works with large hospitals around the U.S. and Canada. And so I'm excited. It would be great if I were able to travel and see some of these customers in person, but for now, just have to do video until I can get out on airplanes and stay at hotels on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I bet that's going to be a different experience. So we'll be bound to talk about that when that happens. So this week's edition of News You Can Use, obviously with a focus on COVID-19, because there's lots going on. In fact, as of today, as we record this, the EU announced that they're prepared to bar US citizens when they open their borders back up for travel, along with, I think, Russia and Brazil. I think there may be some other countries. Thoughts on that?
Well, we're certainly in good company.
Russia and Brazil is good company?
Of course. Maybe I was a little being tongue in cheek, but you know how quickly the tables turn. And right. It wasn't long ago, of course, that we were shutting off traffic visitors from Europe, and two can play at that game. But also, it wasn't very long ago that Florida was telling New Yorkers not to come down. And guess what's happening this week, right? New York is saying that, hey, we think maybe it's not a great idea for Floridians to come up and visit us. And so clearly the pandemic is bouncing around, and some of that's natural and that's going to happen in regions. And some of it is from, let me be politically correct and just say governmental policies that differ from place to place and culture and in the willingness of folks to follow public health guidelines. Let's just say that.
So I can't be politically correct, and I guess I don't have to be. I'm just going to say it straight out. If we don't mandate as a country, not by state, that people use masks when they go out, and I wear a mask to protect you, not to protect myself, and it's a respect and it's a contribution to the greater good. It worked in 1918. It would work now. We have to do this. I mean, otherwise, we're essentially 51 countries that should have borders that are closed, depending on where these outbreaks are taking place.
If you're promoting going back to the Articles of Confederation, because they worked so well before the Constitution, I'm all in favor of that. And then we can all print our own money, and that'll be lots of fun.
Now it's getting political.
For anyone that's taken AP American History, the Constitution versus the Articles of Confederation was something that was very important for us to memorize. And then
just going
to
say, I never
forget.
Did. I have no idea.
Well, you're a foreigner. About. You're a foreigner, and it's hard for us to even understand what you're saying. I wholeheartedly agree with you that it seems that science actually works, that there really is science that can help us live a more prosperous lives. And one of those, which is really, I think, actually kind of counterintuitive. If you would have asked me a year ago about wearing a cloth covering over my mouth and nose and said, boy, we think this is really effective at preventing very communicable viruses, I would have just intuitively, with my minimal training, said, doesn't seem like that's correct. But now we know it to be true that even though this is so COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 virus is so easily transmitted far, and it hangs in the air for potentially hours, and it can be stopped by a non-medical grade piece of cloth. Right. Not, of course, all. It doesn't stop everything, but it stops a great preponderance of it. And, you know, I think it was a couple weeks ago where they found two hairdressers. I want to say this was
right.
In Georgia.
Yeah. I don't remember where it was, but I remember the numbers. Go on.
Yeah. Well, correct me if I don't have the numbers specifically, but there were two hairdressers that turned out to be positive, COVID positive, and they were treating not treating, they were taking care and cutting hair, which is obviously you're very close to someone.
I just want to say, having had my hair cut for the first time in 15 weeks, that is a treatment that I was very grateful for.
Yeah, yeah. So it would have been very easy and understandable for them to have innocently and unknowingly transmitted the virus to tens of people, because they took care of, I think it was in the hundreds, if you
140.
Okay.
And how many did they manage to transmit?
I know that number, zero.
Isn't that astounding? I mean, just zero. Think about that.
Yeah.
And I applaud that particular pair of hairdressers, the actual institution that they work at. They enforced it not only with their staff, but also, based on what I read, it was all the people coming in. That was what was required. You have to applaud that kind of behavior. It's here to protect you. You should protect me.
Absolutely. And I think that's where, the message has gotten out that I'm not wearing this mask so that you don't infect me, because we know it does not work for that.
Right.
For the common mask, right? So some of the medical grade masks, the N95 absolutely does decrease that, but most of us can't get those. And so I've ordered my face mask through Etsy, and these are just folks that have a sewing machine in their house somewhere, and it works. And just not even being charitable, even if you don't like your fellow man. I was talking to someone about business travel and how some airline travel is getting back, but business travel by and large is not going anywhere, not even a dent. And I get that, because I don't want to go on an airplane I don't want to go on an airplane in general right now because it's confined, but I surely don't want to go on an airplane where they're going to have a lax attitude towards the very basic things, such as covering your nose and mouth with a face mask. And
well, in fairness to the airline, so again, they suffer from the same problem that the states do with this highly variable implementation. And I got to, call out to United and, declare my own personal interests that, people either know or don't know, doesn't matter. But what did that airline do? They said, well, if the government, the federal government, won't mandate it and we can't, what we're going to do is we're going to mark off those individuals that refuse to comply. And they essentially put them on an internal no-fly list that says, we're not going to carry you as passengers in the future if you won't behave like a responsible citizen. And the other airlines have followed suit. So I have to admire that kind of behavior. That's, taking a stand appropriately for the protection of everybody, their employees and their passengers.
No doubt. And then I'll take a less charitable view and say it's good for business, right?
It is.
It's good for business to do that and to assure everyone that, they do mandate, and I hear your point, because the federal government makes certain mandates about how big your suitcase can be and where it has to be and whether your seat can be reclined or not. But you should have your face mask on unless you're eating. Now, let me ask you a question. Typically, you're the one that poses questions. I'm going to turn the tables on you. What are the medical conditions that restrict one from wearing a face mask? Because apparently, if someone simply says the magic words, I can't wear a face mask, I have a healthcare condition, you have to walk away. That's what I've read, that they're not allowed to say, well, what medical condition do you have? And the question that I asked you, but I have not given you a chance to answer, is there such a thing as a medical condition where you can't wear a face mask? I'm not aware of what it is.
No, I'll translate it into a personal experience with my own father, who had really severe I don't want to say claustrophobia, but struggle with any kind of restriction. So he couldn't wear a seatbelt in the car. He actually had a medical certificate. It was as a result of being imprisoned in an SS jail and a whole bunch of experiences. And I wonder if there's maybe something. I mean, I don't want to diminish anybody that genuinely has. So claustrophobia might be something that could
That's
cause
an excellent point that I did not think about
severe problems. And I'm thinking possibly. And I don't know, I'm stretching a little bit, but I think of respiratory conditions where maybe the restrictions. So somebody with COPD that already has a challenge, if you're, on oxygen at home and you travel, maybe you take oxygen, so I don't know Does it cause enough of a problem that that might limit somebody's ability? I'm not sure. So I want to be charitable, but I'm reaching a little bit to find instances. And again, I want to be respectful of the folks that genuinely have a fear or a problem with that. But at the same time, that has to be the minority in my mind.
Yeah. Well, that's, I certainly wasn't thinking about claustrophobia. I was thinking of, so that's good. I definitely appreciate that. I was thinking of, are there, you know, respiratory diseases?
Right.
And sure, I would think if that's true, then you're probably on supplemental oxygen. And then we see those folks. I guess what's happening, I think, and what's going to happen is that people who don't really have diseases that do require that simply don't want to wear a face mask. And then they're exposing the entire airplane because you can't get far away. And so, there's that problem. But it all starts with, to get back to your original point minutes ago, it really would be just awesome if the federal government mandated that when you're outside or when you're in an enclosed space, at the very least, you should have a face mask on unless you have a medical condition that precludes it. And then I would love it if we could have some physician sign off on that.
Personal responsibility. And I'm sure there will be people that will try and bypass it as they do to bring on their peacocks and squirrels as support animals. But, you know, let's have the majority wearing these masks in all instances, wherever possible.
Absolutely.
All right. So masks, I think the overriding message is wear a mask. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. I'm joined as usual each month by Craig Joseph. He's the Chief Medical Officer for Nordic Consulting Partners. We were just talking about masks and indeed Europe. Wanted to delve into some other areas. And I know you specifically have been looking at E&M codes and what's going to change. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Well, it's this is kind of deep into baseball, in the weeds, as they say. Physicians for 3 or 4 decades now have been forced to write increasingly long progress notes. So their documentation of when you go to the office or when they see you in the hospital or when they do an operation has just gotten bigger and bigger with more required elements in order to get paid. And to try to decrease some of the burnout that causes, where physicians are taking charts home, not physically anymore, but are going home and logging into their computers after dinner and finishing up their charts, which typically they never had to do before these documentation requirements were put into place. The government and the American Medical Association have tried to reflect some of the, to ease some of the requirements. And some of those changes are going into place on January 1st of next year. And I think most docs are not focused on that. I understand why. It's for that reason that we talked about earlier. It's that whole COVID thing. But the way you get paid is going to change based on the documentation. And it's not simply you don't have to do any documentation. It kind of changes it from quite onerous to slightly less onerous. But there's still some requirements. And so one thing that really has gotten my attention in the past, and again, most patients won't know this, but in the past, if the physician spent more than half of his or her time with you in the office counseling you, so really not touching you or looking in your ears or looking up lab results, but just talking to you about your medical issues and giving you advice, if more than 50% of the time was spent counseling, then they could use time and time alone as the reason for the code that they used for the amount of money that they charge. And that was a rare occurrence, right? Most of the time most physicians don't spend half their time doing counseling and office visit. But my understanding of these new codes is you can select time pretty much for any kind of visit. It doesn't have to be counseling preponderance. And so one of my concerns, if that turns out to be the actual way the government interprets it, is that many physicians are going to say, wait a second, if you let me just go by time and then I can just write whatever I want in my note, I don't have to count the number of review of systems that I've talked about or how much I documented my physical exam. If I could go back to the 70s and early 80s, where I just wrote what I thought was best for me to remember this patient so I could refer back to it, refer back to what happened during that visit, that docs are just going to quickly go right back. And I think that they're going to lose some money. They're going to leave money on the table if that happens. And so something that I'm looking into, and I think a lot of folks are starting to think about, how do we make sure that physicians don't try and kind of go back to the heyday of documentation, of less restrictive documentation, kind of just writing what they want. I'm afraid that they're going to have to downcode, meaning they're not going to get as much for the work that they're doing.
So in terms of an unintended consequence, I think the intention of this was good, to reduce the burden of documentation that has been expanding and causing and certainly contributing to burnout. But what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that instead of reducing or making things better, there's a real potential that this could make things worse, particularly from an income standpoint, which is very challenging at this point, because people are not going to have enough information in their notes to be able to bill appropriately for the services that they rendered.
It's a absolutely unintended consequence. And I just worry, because I just know, if someone said to, picked 100 physicians and said, hey, if you've been practicing long enough to remember what it was like before the early 90s, would you like to go back to writing those kinds of notes? And most of us would. I specifically remember being a medical student in the early 90s, I worked with a pediatrician who was retiring actually that year. And this is what he wrote for his 6-month checkup. Now, I'm a pediatrician now, and if I were to write a physical, if I were to do a sick document, a 6-month visit for a 6-month-old, that's at least a page of documentation with solid words throughout. And he wrote, literally, this is what he wrote in the early 90s, 6-month MON, and then a check mark. And then he wrote PE, which stands for physical exam. And then he made a colon and he put a dash with a circle around it, which means physical exam negative. And he wrote plan colon shots. Okay.
It sounds perfect. You and I both know exactly what went on, right?
Now, I would not know what that meant, right? I would not know, well, how thorough of a physical exam did he do? Did he talk about, how the baby was eating? And did he talk about, any constipation? But he knows, right? Because he's been doing it for a long time. And he could tell you, oh, for 6 months, these are the questions I ask. These are the developmental stages I talk about. If there's any, I would chart by exception, right? Meaning if I wrote normal, that means I asked all these things and they were normal. If anything was abnormal, I would have noted it. So if you don't see it there, that means it was normal. Now, that worked great until the 90s, where the payers, the insurance companies and the federal government said, well, we're not going to pay you unless we see this and this and this and this and this and this. How do we know you did those things?
If it's not documented, it didn't happen.
You didn't write it down, you didn't do it. And that was not the case before. So the worry, Dr. Nick, at least in my mind, is if someone says to most of the docs of our era, hey, you can go back to those notes, but you're going to have to, and you're going to document by time, meaning just write down the time you went into the room and document the time you left the room. I worry that they're not going to make as much money for the exact same services that they provided yesterday. And if they write just a little bit more, maybe not as, they certainly don't have to write as much as they do now, but if they write a little bit more, they'll be able to more appropriately get reimbursed for the services that they did provide. And so that's a worry, something I'm thinking about. I don't know the answer. I just suspect it's hard for me to imagine coming to you or someone coming to me and saying, hey, now you don't have to write all these things. I'd be like, I'm on it, man. Next day, boom, all of my electronic health record macros and templates are going out the door, and I'm just going back to writing physical exam normal, plan shots. That's a beautiful thing. And if I'm allowed to do that, I'm going to do that. So it's just something to think about. I agree with you. The best of intentions from the AMA and from CMS, the federal government. But alas, I fear they will have unintended consequences.
That's, I think, important. And what it tells people, and maybe one of the things they should think about, is that they're going to need some help through that. And I don't think you mentioned it, but I believe that the transition date is the 1st of January, 2021.
That's the plan. Yeah. That's the plan. So, and again, I'm not worried that too many people are going to turn on a dime and start start, right. You know, but I just think it's a very real risk, and big hospitals and big clinics are going to have to be worried about making sure their docs don't misinterpret these rules.
Right. Okay, so we've got a few minutes left. I know that we had some announcements from Apple. I happened to notice that you thought one of them was exciting and interesting. Tell us what that was.
I feel like you're making fun of me, but that's fine.
No,
that's fine. No, I'm comfortable.
No, not
I'm
me.
Comfortable in my skin, Dr. Nick, and it's okay. I did note that I thought it was exciting and interesting that the new Apple, I think it's just the software on the Apple Watch. So I don't think it's necessarily a new Apple Watch, but I could be wrong with that. It will have functionality to know when you're washing your hands. And so this is valid during our COVID-19 times. If it senses that you're washing your hands, and it will base that, make that determination based on movement of your hands, of the watch, and also sound. You can turn the mic on and listen to the water. It will start making, it will start showing bubbles on the screen, and will kind of start a counter, a clock of some sort to make sure that you're, to encourage you to wash your hands for, I think the number was 25 seconds or so.
Extended it. I heard it was 20.
Is it 20? Okay,
that
20
seconds.
That already
feels like an eternity, let's be honest.
Let's make
I'm prepping
30.
For the OR.
Let's make it 30. Well,
God.
I just made that. All right, 20 seconds. Whatever that number was, I honestly don't know what that number was. But I think it's one of those little ways that if you're really interested in following these little, sometimes little things that we do make a big difference. And so I'm one that maybe should wash his hands a little bit longer. I will admit, I think I wash them frequently enough, but maybe I could wash them a little longer. And if my watch kind of gives me my sad faces when it doesn't think I washed my hands for long enough, maybe that will affect some change. I don't know. I did think it's interesting, these little kind of technological ways of kind of pushing us to do the right thing.
Absolutely. I am teasing you a little bit, but then I get to do that. You're right. It's a technical nudge. It's, you know, designed to sort of improve behavior. I've seen some others that I think are maybe slightly more practical, like playing 20-second ditties in public washrooms that people can time themselves to, and it just keeps cycling round. And, you know, that has two advantages. One, it gives you a timing mechanism to say, hey, you know, this is the start and finish. But two, if you keep hearing the same ditty, you're not going to hang around and stay in there for too long.
No, it'd make me crazy. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know that is that a problem that you have?
Not for me, but I've seen it.
You assume there are others that have that
problem. Oh, it's absolutely other people's problem. So, you know, I think that's right. It's, you know, part of the checklist sort of concept, but, you know, this is a check. You can't really checklist when you're washing your hands. And, I agree. I mean, I think it's smart, it's clever, but it just seemed a little bit, excessive in that particular piece of technology. But at the same time, people wearing it, if it's just going to happen, hey, they'll start to notice it. And I know lots of people love their devices. I've just never gotten to wearing a watch. So, hasn't worked for me. So
yeah,
I feel left out.
Yeah, well, that's on you. I don't feel like the Apple Watch is going to fly off the shelves now.
No. For all the parents going, here, put it on your children to make them wash their hands more frequently.
Yeah, it's a fun little thing. And, you know, in my work, I often see little changes, specifically talking about electronic health records, little changes sometimes make a big difference in the way you word things and the way you color things. And so I thought it was just interesting.
Yep. No, I agree. Well, as usual, we've run out of time, but I think some great topics. Congratulations again on the new job. Excited for you. Always excited to catch up. Hopefully we'll have some new and interesting information around COVID-19 and some of the other developments for next month. Great.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, The Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.